So, dear friends, this morning we're going to do the Great Compassionate Meditation from the Buddhist tradition. Some of you know it as metta or loving kindness, and we've done that together before here, and I know you're familiar with it. And if you're not, just follow along as I guide you through this. If there are parts of it that are a little bit of a stretch, that's okay. Just relax and be with it as far as you can go. And so meanwhile, dear friends, if you would, just get relaxed and settle in. Take a deep breath, a gentle breath. And in this practice, we always begin with ourselves. We always begin with ourselves, offering ourselves loving kindness. For you could search all over the planet and never find anyone who deserves it more than you. So just take this in. May I be at peace. May I be happy. May I be healthy. And may I live with ease. And just breathe into that, allowing that blessing to fill you, to fill your heart space and settle your mind. Take it in deeply. May I be at peace. May I be happy. May I be healthy. And may I live with ease. And then just take a deep, gentle breath and offer this blessing, the same blessing, to those that you hold most dear. It can be someone that you know in your family, your friends, or someone you have known in this earth plane or in any other realm. And offer this to them as well. May you, my dearest one, my dearest ones, may you be at peace. May you be happy. May you be healthy. And may you be at ease. And breathe. And if you would, please extend this blessing to those that you might have neutrality for, the people that you may have passed on your way to church this morning, the people that you may pass on the way home, the shopkeepers, the other drivers, the pedestrians, the dog walkers. And extend this blessing to them as well, wanting it as much for them as you want it for your own dearest ones. May you be at peace. May you be happy. May you be healthy. And may you live with ease. Breathe. And now if you would please extend this blessing to those that you may feel are in opposition to your values, your beliefs and concerns. Also include those parts of yourself that may sometimes seem to be in opposition with your higher good. And extend this blessing to them as well, wanting it as much for them as you do for your own dearest ones, for your own well-being. May you be at peace. May you be happy. May you be healthy. And may you live with ease. And breathe. And if you would, please extend this blessing out now. Let it extend out across the planet, beginning right here in this community and extending out into your town of Everett, into Puget Sound, across the nation and across the planet, to all beings everywhere, to the trees, to the oceans, the mountains, all creatures, to the seen and the unseen. May you be at peace. May you be happy. May you be healthy. And may you live with ease.
Thank you, Andrea. So how's that, Steve? Is that any better? The sound? Thank you for helping me out there. So hello, dear friends. How are you today? So good to see you. Oh, it's always good to be seen, too, of course. So this series that we're doing is inspired by the Book of Joy. The Book of Joy, conversations between His Holiness the Dalai Lama and Archbishop Desmond Tutu, who define joy and happiness not as some kind of fleeting pleasure, but as a cluster of skills, a deep resource for us, of values and skills that create more peace in the world. If you want true happiness, true peace and well-being, these are the skills to cultivate. They are perspective, humility, humor, acceptance, not the kind of acceptance that's resignation, but the kind of acceptance that says, oh boy, this is what's happening. Wow, I'm not going to deny that. I'm not going to be in denial about that anymore. That's when we can start to act. It's about also about compassion, forgiveness, gratitude, and generosity, the eight pillars of joy. Now, they tell us that when we have these skills, we'll have the peace that passes understanding. And last week, we talked about the first one, perspective, and the necessity to hold this larger view, this cosmic view, while also tending to the very specific needs and challenges before us. And today, we're going to be looking at compassion. Now, we all know about the negative, reactive states that just seem to well up and within us, the tendencies sometimes to lash out in anger and unkindness. But there seems to also be this innate, reactive, spontaneous, compassionate response as well. It's well documented and has shown up again and again throughout history. A philosopher once noted the strange incongruence that a prison guard at a Nazi prison camp would, on his way home from work, stop and risk his life to help save the life of a stranger. What is this? This spontaneous nature of compassion, it's everywhere. And it used to be thought in scientific circles, and I know there's still a lot of holdout on this, but the thought was that human nature was at its core aggressive, violent, but more recent science is questioning this assumption. There is out there, friends, I have to tell you, and it is so exciting to me, a great movement in the scientific study of compassion. It's amazing. A growing field at the University of Madison in Wisconsin, and Richie Davison's incredible work at Stanford, the Compassionate Care Institute, at Berkeley, at UNC, and of all places, North Carolina. And I think that this is exciting because the more we know and learn about compassion, the more ways that we know how to inspire and cultivate and live it and how to educate our children and each other. You know, there's been so much misunderstanding about compassion, and we want to clear that up right now. Right here today. Because compassion, my friends, is not just some kind of sentimental feel-good thought we might entertain, but it's a mighty and mysterious force for good. And there seems to be something about the practice of compassion that fortifies us in troubling times. like the monk who had been imprisoned and tortured for years. And upon his release, when he was asked by the Dalai Lama, "What was your biggest challenge that you faced in imprisonment?" he said, "It was maintaining compassion for his prisoners." He said, "When I was able to hold that compassionate view, I was able to maintain my strength and courage." Oh. Compassion is what happens when authentic caring meets the discomfort and pain of others. May I use the word suffering here? Would that be all right? I know Unity churches are a little squeamish about that word. But compassion is what happens when authentic caring meets the suffering of others with the intention to make a positive difference. Without indifference and without hiding in any spirituality that says, "Oh, it's not God's will. Karma, it's all karma." Or even hiding out in some of our own great spiritual truths, "Well, it's all God, it's all in divine order." I know. This isn't going to be easy. Of course, it's in divine order. That's the larger perspective. But what is divine order? Could it be to inaugurate compassion to the world? The word inaugurate means introduce. To introduce and inaugurate compassion to the world. What a mighty work that would be for a Unity church like this one. So compassion takes into consideration two factors. One is that everybody wants the same thing. We all want the same thing. We all want to be cared for, have our basic needs met, to be safe, to have enough. And that everyone has this potential, this spark within us for connection and caring. And whether or not you accept these two, or you can list the many exceptions, I know, this is what we're looking at today. Brian Swim, that scientist that studies the cosmos and evolution, and many other scientists as well, tell us that it appears that compassionate care and concern for others developed way before human intelligence, way before language. But compassion may have stimulated the development of both intelligence and language. The earliest bonds of caring showing up well before humans and other mammals in the relationships between mother and offspring. And researchers today that are studying compassion and care are telling us that it shows up in human infants as early as 6 months. Some say 3 months. And rather than competitive and aggressive, scientists are saying that cooperation and empathy and generosity are fundamental to survival. Swim says, we didn't invent compassion. It's just flowing through us, or it can. And expanding this parental instinct is possible, not just for our families and our communities, but for all beings, for the planet, and it's absolutely imperative for our survival. Of course, we have to be wise. We have to bring some wisdom to this subject. Even though we have this potential for good, it often can be obscured, hidden in our unresourcefulness and selfishness and greed as well. Some of you probably have heard of the bystander effect. You know what that is? The bystander effect. How the more people that are around a situation of crisis, the less likely anyone is to help. Daniel Goleman, he's the one who's done all that research on emotional intelligence, tells his own story of walking through New York City one day when the flow of pedestrian traffic seemed to come to this bottleneck as people walked over this man who was sprawled out on the sidewalk. You know, we have this tendency. There's a tendency in human nature. I don't really understand what we're doing, but we seem to go along with the flow. We just kind of go along with the flow. And we have to be very aware and awake to what we're flowing in and through. So Goleman stopped to investigate. And when he stopped, several others started to stop as well. And what they found was this man was an immigrant, and he had collapsed from hunger. So someone gave him some orange juice. And pretty soon, a little group of people have mobilized and were feeding him and giving him food and getting him to see if he could stand up. And they got him fortified and stood him up and sent him on his way. Jesus' story of the Good Samaritan is played out on the earth stage in untold ways every day. All it takes is someone to stop. So scientists tell us that although that compassion is innate within us, there's a risk of it going dormant within the first few years unless it is nurtured and tended to. Just as we come into the world with our gifts and talents, in order for them to be realized, they need some proper care and instruction. Yet even without it, it's amazing how much of this just comes forth in us, springs forth, how our capacity for compassion can be cultivated at any age. And yes, wisdom is essential. We have to be careful not to conclude that acting compassionately means always to give people what they want. And we have to understand that just because we have compassion for someone doesn't mean it's going to change their hearts, but it certainly will change ours. And so compassion addresses not just these visible signs of suffering, but the deep-seated misunderstanding about our true nature, that we're all on this planet together, our interdependence, and how we all have come here from the efforts of others. The problems begin when we forget this reality. So it's our job not to just rail against others who don't seem to get this, but to remind others of our interdependence and our kinship. We all have blind spots. It may be easier for us to understand and have compassion for someone who's a Muslim or a Palestinian than someone who has different political views than us. So we have to be able to stand firm in our resistance to injustice without standing against the humanity of another. And as we become more skillful at this, it's really helpful, for me anyhow, to know the difference between empathy and compassion. Empathy is such a beautiful phenomenon in our human hearts, is it not? That fabulous rapport and emotional resonance with another one, anyone, species, hopefully. Empathy stimulates compassion and alerts us to the conditions of another. And yet taking on the feelings of others can also cause us a lot of stress. And if we get stuck there, we can get an overwhelm and burned out. So while empathy stimulates compassion, compassion grounds us, grounds empathy in the fundamental belief that love and care and action does make a difference. Stories are told of His Holiness the Dalai Lama being in these large conferences, you know, in front of all these people. And someone will tell him a story that is heartbreaking. And he bursts into tears and weeps, openly weeps. Everything stops as he courageously allows his tears to fall. And then he dries his tears and resumes his work before him. And that, my friends, is what we have to do. To allow the sadness and remain dedicated to the work before us. Like the good healthcare worker, the teacher, the wildlife biologist, the social worker, the parent whose work involves such heartbreak sometimes, yet remain steadfast and focused on what needs to be done. That is what compassion looks like. Compassion is not just about adopting this passive, gentle demeanor. Sometimes it has to be harsh and forceful and even angry. It may include anger sometimes, but not just as an uncontrollable reaction, but as a chosen response. When we have compassion for another's well-being at heart, sometimes we'll have to take action that on the surface seems to lack compassion. These actions can be forceful if there are no other solutions, but they can never, ever be motivated by hatred. Compassion doesn't require us to like those that we feel compassion for. And it requires that we do some deep self-inquiry and be honest, to question our motivations. Am I fooling myself here? Am I fooling myself that I'm being compassionate because I want to be seen as spiritual, see myself as offering something to others that looks altruistic, but in some way is self-serving and manipulative? Such an inquiry is not to condemn ourselves, but to help us self-correct. So you see, the real challenge of compassion is discerning which actions are really going to help others and support others, or is it going to support unhealthy behavior, and whether our actions are there to support our identity as being nice and good. You know, the Buddhists have a term, I just love this. I hope it doesn't offend anyone here. They call it idiot compassion. It's one of my specialties. You see, they're just, of course, trying to be humorous and shock us a little bit, so we'll listen to this very important thing that we do and call compassion. But idiot compassion is avoiding conflict, letting people walk all over you, not giving people a hard time when they actually need to be given a hard time. It's not compassion at all. It ends up causing more pain and ends up causing other pain for yourself and others. Idiot compassion lacks courage and lacks intelligence when being nice and being good prevents us from taking the risk that might make us unpopular but might be the right thing to do. It's something that we do a lot and we call compassion is enabling poor behavior. It's a general tendency to give people what they want because you just can't bear to see them in pain. Anybody relate to that? Basically, we're not giving them what they need. We're trying to escape our own discomfort. In other words, we're doing it for ourselves. We're not really doing it for them. And so we need to really look at this in ourselves and create some healthy boundaries. It's not the compassionate thing to keep allowing bad behaviors. And it can be quite difficult to go through the process of actually withdrawing from someone. But sometimes, if there's any chance at all for someone to wake up and start to work on their own issues, that opportunity only happens if you can draw the line and get out of there. And if someone treats you unfairly, and then you immediately decide to trust them again, my friends, that person is very unlikely to have had a sudden conversion to being trustworthy. So ask yourself, am I avoiding conflict and calling it compassion? Am I afraid to be honest because I might end up being disliked? Am I letting people off the hook too easily? Doing the right thing can cause pain for ourselves and others. A prince tried to trick the Buddha by asking him, well, is it ever okay to cause pain? And the Buddha said, well, you know, if a child is sick, if a child is choking, let's say a child is choking on a stone, it can be very painful to treat that child and to dislodge that stone. It can be painful, but not harmful. And in fact, will prevent harm. So true compassion doesn't necessarily shy away from causing pain when necessary. Causing pain is not the same as causing harm. So here are some ways to offer compassion to the world. First is offering this metta, loving kindness meditation to the world. You can do it as a daily practice. I like to do it as a daily practice. And then also silently offer it to others wherever you are. Just some small phrase of blessing, silently. It's easy and portable. When you're taking a walk, offering it to those that you pass. When you're standing in line at the grocery store, silently saying to yourself, and as you extend it to another, may you be peaceful. May you live with ease. Someone you will never see before. And this actually plants the seeds of compassion in us. This primes us for action when situations arise. Naturally, we can find ourselves acting in compassionate ways that we never would have occurred to us before. A study at UNC showed that just 7 weeks of this meditation practice, that participants were found to have increased life satisfaction, less depressive symptoms, and also it seemed to decrease our bias towards others. It decreased migraines and actually it decreased emotional tension, and it increased the good gray matter in our brains. Wow, this little practice. Another way to offer compassion. Actions don't have to be big, but they can still be life-changing when you give your full attention to someone who needs to talk. And still another way, very important way, is to vow to stay out of cynicism. It doesn't mean we won't be sad and disappointed, all of that. But we know that God, the sacred, the great compassionate one, whatever word you call upon to call upon the wordless, is with us. And the nature of creation is that it affirms life and is free from cynicism. Compassion, you see, is bold and brilliant and radical. It's a choice to go against the stream of self-interest and self-centeredness. And of course, another way to offer compassion is to get engaged in rectifying wrongs, to impose injustice, protecting our rights, for example. Nonviolent compassion can be quite assertive, but always distinguishing between the person and what they have done. Here's another way to offer compassion that I think is incredibly meaningful. I know that supporting others when we're in pain and we're in grieving may be the very last thing that you want to do, or that you have think that you have the energy to do. But it is often the very best thing for us to do for ourselves. To use our down moments and our challenging moments, that can be a signal for us to do something for for others. Something other than just offering your good advice. I know, I love to give advice. But how good is that really? And doesn't that often just cause more pain? Have you ever noticed that? Advice, even the good kind, must be doled out carefully as if you're handling fire. What people really need is encouragement. What we all really need is encouragement. Yes, encouragement. Encouragement, offering encouragement to one another, offering encouragement to the good people who keep this community together, is a conscious spiritual practice of compassion. Encouragement reminds us of our wisdom and our strength and our courage and the power of the human spirit to make what appears impossible, possible. You know what? You've been in training for this for a long time. It's time. You're ready for this. It's time for us to collectively stand up, remain calm, but not so calm that you fall back to sleep. And with peace and mutual respect, realizing that even those that we don't agree with want the same things, and to speak from that core knowing. In words attributed to Buddha, hatred never ceases by hatred, but by love alone is healed. Another practice is that we have to offer loving kindness to those we have to who are in opposition to our values. 8th century teacher Shantideva explains, if you extend compassion towards those that appear to be your enemies, they become your best spiritual teachers. Oh, yes. Not easy, this business of compassion. And we're always leaving pieces of ourselves behind. So what kind of contribution do you want to make? We need to take responsibility for what we elicit in others, to be aware of our relation of what we bring forth and encourage the best in others, foster positive emotions. Of course, we know that. Aren't we specialists in that field? Fostering positive emotions. But the research actually bears this out as well at UNC. Positive emotions open our minds to a larger perspective, to be more flexible and creative. And unlike depression, which often provokes a downward spiral, positive emotions actually lift us up into an upward spiral. We know that. It creates resilience and helps us manage adversity better. It's not just some kind of Pollyanna game. I love this quote from the Dalai Lama. Overcoming our harmful emotional reactions in ourselves is a form of compassion, not just for ourselves, but for everyone that we come into contact with. So, dear friends, consider the message of your behavior, because that's going to shape the future of our families and our world. You know, the other day I was at one of those big stationery supply stores. You know, they've got a lot of white in them, white walls and white stuff everywhere, kind of sterile environment, if you ask me. I know those things are fun, but it's just all just sort of, you know, not that interesting really to me. And I was standing in line, and there was a customer ahead of me, and she was having a little issue because she wanted to return an item and get her money back, but she had opened up the item. And so the cashier said, you know, we don't accept items that have been opened for refund. And the woman said, well, she was very mild and meek about this whole thing. She said, well, you know, I didn't know it was the wrong thing until I opened it. And I really want to return it and get my money back. And here's my receipt. And she pulls out her receipt, and she's kind of shaking, and she's sort of upset. And the cashier looks at her and looks at the receipt, and she says, well, look, I'm going to let you return it. I'm going to give you your money back. But I'm going to ask you just not to do it again. You know, next time, don't open the package when you return something. And the customer said, well, I'm so sorry. I don't mean to cause you any inconvenience. And the cashier said, no, it's okay. We're going to deal with it. Oh, well, I'm so grateful. Thank you so much. I'm so grateful. And she's very overwrought. And the cashier's saying, it's okay. We're going to deal with it. And so it's no problem. She's trying to calm her down, and she's trying to deal with it. And I'm standing there watching, and I'm thinking, oh, my God. So anyhow, the two of them worked it out, and the lady went on her way, thanking the cashier, and I got up to my turn, and I said, you know what? Watching you work today made my day. That was beautiful, what you did with her. It was wonderful. You made her day, and you made my day, too. And then this cashier, in this sterile environment, the white walls, you know those doors that kind of swoosh open, you know, swoosh open. She starts talking to me about the virtues of compassion. And I looked at her, little wrinkles around her eyes, little smile wrinkles. You could tell she smiled a lot. In her sweet face, you could see she'd been around. She knew a little bit about life. She's not a young woman. She was a woman who'd seen some years, and she had some stories to tell. And there she was in this big box store, practicing and living and preaching compassion. My dear friends, we can do this great good work. We all carry the seeds of compassion. And there is no such thing as selfish happiness. As we wind our way through our days in traffic in the buses, on buses and stores, sitting meditation, just make it a constant practice to offer a silent blessing on the behalf of those we meet. It's not going to do any harm, and it may help us develop more peace, understanding, and goodwill. Oh, breathe with me. Thank you. God bless you. Namaste.